Good morning.
You know, I continually wonder how this gospel made the cut. I mean, there are a lot of things that Jesus said and did that never even got written down. Of the ones that found their way into the gospels, we don't have time and space to read all of them, or even nearly all of them, on Sundays. A lot of stories simply don't get told. Most of the ones that get cut are ones that make the apostles look a little bad, or, heaven forbid, make Jesus look a little bad. And this one made the cut, despite the fact that if you listen to it closely, really makes Jesus look terrible. I mean, I can understand why it made Matthew's cut, why he put it in the gospel. Here is Matthew leading a largely Jewish community that is taking in a larger and larger number of Gentile members. And he needs to justify that. So any possible story of Jesus' interaction with Gentiles is going to be attractive to Matthew. It'll make his list. But why did it make the liturgical list? I mean, listen to it. First of all, Jesus loses. You almost never hear gospels in which Jesus loses. But he loses the debate with this woman. He winds up doing what she wanted done rather than what he wanted done, in addition to having been topped in the verbal debate. He learned very clearly the answer to the question, what is the most dangerous place in the world to be? Between a mother bear and her cubs. He's gotten between this mother bear and her cub. This woman is going to get her daughter cured no matter what she has to do it. And she has to flip Jesus. She will. And she does. But it's not just that Jesus loses. It's that he comes out looking really bad. I mean, not only chauvinist, but nasty. It is not right to take the food of the children and throw it to the dogs. I mean, that's a flat-out insult. He's calling this woman a dog. We have a term in English for female dog. We don't use it in polite company. But what happens? He hits her with this. It's not right to take the food of the children and throw it to the dogs. And she gives him a judo move. Take the weight, strength, and whatnot of your opponent and use it against them. Instead of debating the insult or standing up in horror or whatever, she's zeroed right in. She wants her daughter taken care of. She takes the insult, accepts it, turns it around, and uses it on him. But even the dogs eat the scraps that fall under the table. You can almost see his head go back. Wow. Hadn't expected that. Not from a woman. Certainly not from a Gentile. And absolutely not from a Gentile woman. Wow. Oh, woman. Great is your faith. Let it be done for you as you wish. Now, what do we learn from that story? Aside from the danger of getting between a bear and her cubs, or the vagaries of gospel selection process. I think it tells us something important about Jesus and about ourselves. First of all, it tells us about Jesus that most of our normal ideas about Jesus are wrong. Normally, when we think of Jesus Christ, we think of the mind and soul of God walking around in a human body. And this certainly doesn't sound like the mind and soul of God, does it? Well, problem is, you see, that the idea, mind and soul of God walking around in a human body, is not the doctrine of the church. And is, in fact, a heresy. After 400 years of wrestling with all this and trying to get more and more precise as they went along, in 451, the Council of Chalcedon published what amounted to the final decree on who is Jesus. And the one thing they said, and as clearly as they could, was very much like the old thing we used to say at benediction. Anybody here old enough to remember benediction? And you had the divine praises afterwards, and one of them was, "Praise be Jesus Christ, true God and true man." Well, allowing for a change in vocabulary for gender reasons, no, it's exactly right. True God and true man. Fully God in the fullness of God's divinity, and fully human in the fullness of our humanity. Now, I'm not just a body. In fact, that may be the least attractive part of me. I'm a mind and a soul and a heart and a will and emotions and a history and so on and so on. And so is Jesus. Jesus is, as Paul says very clearly, one with us in all things but sin. So he not only has a human body, he has a human mind and a human soul and a human heart and a human will and human emotions and human prejudices. That must mean that it's not a sin to be prejudiced, huh? Come back to that when we start thinking about what it means for us. But he grows up in a very tight little society that has been under persecution for hundreds of years, and like all peoples under persecution, has turned inward, become rather defensive, and rather insular. So of course he grows up with a prejudice against the Goyim. And you hear it here. "My mission is only to the lost sheep of the house of Israel. It's not right to take the food of the children and throw it to the dogs." But what happens next? She confronts him with it. She slaps him in the face with it. And he starts. He doesn't get defensive. Doesn't try to justify it. Doesn't go on the counterattack. He learns from the experience. "Oh, wow. I didn't expect that. Not from a Gentile woman, I didn't expect that. Something different going on here." "Woman, great is your faith. Let it be done for you as you wish." I think that says something about us, too. It's not a sin for us to be prejudiced. In fact, it's inevitable. We all grow up in a culture. We all grow up learning from it, the good and the bad. And I think it would be impossible to learn and grow up in any culture and not learn at some level the prejudices of that culture. And our culture certainly has plenty. We've had a long, nasty history of racism, sexism, and a half a dozen other prejudices. When this church was built, center aisle was for the English. The side aisle towards the center was for the high-class Irish. The side aisle towards the wall was for the low-class Irish. The first balcony was for free citizens of color. The second balcony was for slaves. And nobody thought that was wrong. We were divided by race, by legal status, slave or free, by class, rich or poor, by nationality, English or Irish, all in one building, and we called it a church. We grew up in the prejudices of our society. And they're still there. We've made a lot of progress. America is not nearly as racist a society as it was when I was a kid. But it's still there. We're not nearly as sexist as we were when I was a kid. But it's still there. I think it says something both for how far we've come and how far we haven't yet come, that we had two major presidential candidates this year and still have one of them, one of whom was female, the other of whom was African-American. 40 years ago, that would have been inconceivable. Hopefully, 40 years from now, nobody will pay any mention to it. But we're on the cusp now where it can happen. But we sure mention it. We sure take it into our considerations in calculating the likelihood of elections. We're making progress. But we've got a long way to go. The church, too, has its own prejudices and gets called on them and needs to learn from it. Listen to Paul in the second reading. He's writing to the Gentiles at Rome, who are now beginning to outnumber the Jewish Christians in Rome and are getting quite full of themselves. We're it now. Those Jews are passé. That's yesterday's news. We Gentile Christians, we're the somebodies around here. And Paul says, oh yeah? Well, if you want to say that, remember that you don't support the root. The root supports you. The fall of Israel has been both temporary and partial. And ultimately, he says very clearly, all Israel will be saved. Pas Israel sosetai. Kol Israel, the same phrase that the rabbis go back to. Kol Israel will have a part in the Olam Haba, in the life to come. Paul endorses that 100%. Bring some of the Roman Gentile Christians up short. Hopefully makes them turn around and take a look at things. Rethink their prejudices. It's not a sin to be prejudiced. It's inevitable. But it is a sin not to rethink, reevaluate, and grow when you're confronted by your prejudices. When your prejudices are unveiled to you as such. Gee, that's not a fact. That's just a prejudice. I should move beyond that. Not get defensive. Not steamroller over it. Not ignore it. But do what Jesus did. Wow. Woman, great is your faith. That's the humanity of Jesus in the making. That's Jesus growing into the fullness of his humanity. That's also Jesus challenging us to grow into the fullness of our humanity. Sisters and brothers, let us pray.